I surely guess it does.
The paper was brown, looking like it had been used to wrap greasy food. Abe took it and angled it toward the morning light, trying to read the faint words.
Sorry about the paper. I kept my fat back bacon in it.
Abe, I'm glad the muty bobcat didn't chew you. Always sleep with one eye and two ears open. Known for some weeks you've been on my trail. Should have known I couldn't just walk out on life like I hoped. Still, rather been lost and stayed lost. No point weeping on account of a spent round. By the time you read this, I'll be moved on some. But not far. Reckon we might meet soonish, Abe. And jaw over old times. Like old men do. Watch your back, traitor.
Abe folded it carefully and tucked it into an inside pocket, intending to read it several times when he was alone.
I'm mighty grateful, Floyd. Reckon I'm about ready to tackle those good-smelling apples now.
Abe felt more cheerful than he had in a long while. It was a trip through the outer edge of hell. The WAG was underpowered and had a gearbox that drove like it had been old before Skydark. It was a tight squeeze for all seven of them to cram into the cramped vehicle, forcing Mildred onto JB's lap and Dean to be hunched up between the two front bucket seats. Ryan drove as fast as he dared, peering out through the armor obslit hacked out of a single sheet of corroded iron. All around them it felt like the world was ending. They got off the dunes and onto the bucking ribbon of the northbound blacktop, but the earthquake was so severe that it was almost impossible to hold the WAG on the highway. None of them had ever experienced a shaker that went on and on, each shock following right on the heels of the one previous, seeming to get stronger and fiercer. Dust blew around them, and it sounded like a hurricane howling outside. With the fine sand that seeped in through every crack in the WAG, combined with a foul miasma of sulfur, the air was almost unbreathable. During the crazed journey back toward the redoubt, hardly a word was spoken, everyone aware that time was closing in on them. There was a brief pause between shocks, and Ryan stopped the crowded armor WAG.
I'm gonna take a look.
There was nothing that he could recognize. The road had virtually disappeared under the sand, and the light was like late dusk in a dank November. Black clouds whirled across the lowering sky, and the strange golden haze from the sulfur floated beneath it. Ryan glanced across toward the gulf on their left.
Fire blast.
There were waves 15 feet high crashing down on the beach, creeping ever higher toward the center of the quay. And out to sea, Ryan could see plenty of even bigger waves, gathering themselves, ready to rage across the low-lying land. Though he couldn't look over the Atlantic from where the WAG was parked, he had no doubt that exactly the same things would be happening on that side, perhaps even more terrifying, as the first ominous signs of the current Holocaust had appeared far away to the east.
How bad is it?
Worse than bad. I can't recognize where we are. There's too much dust. The quake seems to have altered the landscape.
There's some mimosas. I saw some like that just after we left the redoubt. I didn't see any more anywhere else, lover. We must be close now.
All right, folks. It's walking time.
It didn't seem any distance from the shattered remains of the blacktop to the crest of the dunes on the west of the quay, barely 100 yards. But the earth was moving so rapidly, shifting under the feet as much as 18 inches in a single violent jerk, that it was hard going. Dean proved quickest, skipping around, grinning broadly with excitement, his hands out to maintain his balance. He was several paces ahead of any of them as he reached the ridge and stopped, turning to beckon to the others. Ryan could just catch a small part of what he was shouting.
This is the right place, but the sea is...
The rest was torn away by the incandescent bedlam of noise. It was the right place, the stretch of golden beach, now pounded by ferocious surf, and the pile of tumbled rocks that marked the ruins of the hidden redoubt, rocks that were being covered by the highest of the waves now raging in. But that wasn't what caught all of their eyes. It was farther out, much farther out, across what had been the Gulf of Mexico. Ryan's instant calculation told him it had to be 40 or 50 miles away, at the center of an unbelievably vast underwater eruption. The cloud of smoke and steam reached to the upper limits of the atmosphere, boiling, lanced with great darts of silver and purple lightning. Below it was the wave. Ryan closed his eye and looked again, one part of his brain trying to calculate what another part of his brain steadfastly refused to accept. There simply couldn't be a wave that was over 100 feet high, 200 feet, white-topped, black as jet beneath the foam.
How fascinating. A tsunami. A giant tidal wave, hundreds of feet high, racing along at 60 to 100 miles an hour. And I do believe that it's heading in our direction.
Be here in something around 20 to 30 minutes. It'll wash away the whole shooting match. Won't be anything left on the keys but bare rock and some wet sand.
Ryan looked again at the cluster of jagged stone where they'd have to climb before they could make the hazardous plunge into the turmoil of water to try to find the entrance to the redoubt. His heart sank at the thought of the ordeal. Even in brilliant sunshine and a calm sea, it was a stern challenge.
Oh, man, do we have to, Dad?
There must be some other way. I don't think I can.
There is no other way, and time's racing by. No argument. You come, and you have a good chance of survival. Or you can stay here and die. It's the same for everyone.
The group had a belt looped around their left wrist, the other end gripped by the next in line. It wouldn't save them from anything like the giant tidal wave, but it served its purpose and kept them together onto the outcrop of boulders, though everyone was completely soaked by the time they reached the point that overlooked the dark cavern. The day wasn't cold, but Michael was shivering as though he were in the grip of some ferocious ague, his teeth chattering and his fingers clenched tight, his nails biting deep into the palms of his hands.
Here?
One patch of rocky coast looked precisely like another. If they were wrong, then there wasn't going to be time to try to locate the right place before the tsunami struck. Already the tidal wave was visibly much nearer, now looking closer to 500 feet high.
I'll go last.
I'll take Michael.
John and I go with Dean.
And I shall plunge beneath yonder foam like stout Euripides. No, I mean Orpheus. Or was it? Don't let it pass.
Go.
Michael wasn't given enough time to refuse. His wrist linked to Christy, he was jerked into the massive, white-topped swell, both of them vanishing. The rest waited and watched, flinching as a large wave broke over the rocks, nearly washing them away.
Go!
Mildred jumped with JB, the slight figure of Dean between them. Doc and Ryan were left alone, staring into the surging blackness below. There wasn't a sign of marine life. No dolphins to bid farewell from the keys. No giant, muty serpents to pluck them to their doom. Unless, Ryan thought, the snakes had already coiled around Christy and the others, dragging them to their undersea lairs, while Moore waited for himself and Doc.
Now!
Ryan grabbed the old man's arm and pulled him into the sea. His last glimpse before he hit the water was of the gigantic tidal wave looming above him and obscuring the horizon with its frothing bulk. They huddled together in the corridor while JB opened the sealed sec doors. The usually smooth gearing and counterweights sounded rusted and damaged, but they worked.
At least we're safe now we're down here. The wave can't get us.
I'm afraid that's not necessarily true, dear lady. When that wave hits the shore, the pressure will be incalculably powerful. It will certainly force the sea through the narrow passage and into this corridor with the most extraordinary force. It will remain intensely dubious whether even these steel sectors will protect us.
Shit. Let's get this jump made triple fast.
The quake and the storm had done further damage to the already ravaged control room. A scummy layer of brackish water covered a quarter of the floor, salt stains on the ceiling and walls showing where it had found its way through from the sea above. The cracks all around the room gave mute support for Doc's fears concerning the effect of the tsunami. The pale yellow walls of the gateway were hardly visible in the poor light. Only about one-third of the light seemed to be working in the complex. As they made their way toward the heart of the Matrans unit, there was a severe jolting shock, and another bank of neon tubes plunged into darkness.
By the three!
Things were moving too fast. Ryan led the way to the open armorglass door of the gateway chamber, ushering the others through. His mind was filled with the image of the tidal wave, bigger than anything he could have imagined in the deeps of a jolt nightmare, plunging toward them. How close was it now? 10 miles still? 5? Or 1?
It has to be close.
How close?
Close.
Doc found a moment to give Ryan a friendly pat on the shoulder as he joined the others in the chamber. Ryan hesitated a moment, wondering whether there was still time to go back and drop the sectors.
No.
Everyone was sitting on the floor, their backs against the walls, waiting for Ryan to join them. For a fraction of a second, Ryan realized that he truly wanted to know what would happen when the tidal wave struck the keys. Was Doc right? Would the gateway suddenly flood with seawater under such pressure that it would crush flesh? would be amazing to see that.
Lover?
Ryan shook his head, glancing once around the room at the others, and smiled.
Might one ask what is so profoundly amusing?